Chapter 28. That is the place, said Dane, indicating with the blade of his paddle a small islet about a mile ahead of the canoe. That is the place where Babalichai promised that a boat from the Praw would come for me when the sun is overhead. We will wait for that boat there. Elmer, who was steering, nodded without speaking, and by a slight sweep of his paddle, laid the head of the canoe in the required direction. They were just leaving the southern outlet of the Pantai, which lay behind them in a straight and long vista of water shining between two walls of thick verdure that ran downwards and towards each other, till at last they joined and sank together in the faraway distance. The sun, rising above the calm waters of the straits, marked its own path by a streak of light that glided upon the sea and darted up the wide reach of the river, a hurried messenger of light and life to the gloomy forests of the coast, and in this radiance of the sun's pathway floated the black canoe heading for the islet which lay bathed in sunshine, the yellow sands of its encircling beach shining like an inlet golden disc on the polished steel of the unwrinkled sea. To the north and south of it rose other islets, joyous in their brilliant coloring of green and yellow, and on the main coast the somber line of mangrove bushes ended to the southward in the reddish cliffs of Tanjung Mura, advancing into the sea, steep and shadowless under the clear light of the early morning. The bottom of the canoe grated upon the sand as the little craft ran upon the beach. Ally leaped on shore and held on while Dane stepped out carrying Nina in his arms, exhausted by the events and the long traveling during the night. Almayer was the last to leave the boat, and together with Ally ran it higher upon the beach. Then Ali, tired out by the long paddling, laid down in the shade of the canoe, and incontinently fell asleep. Almayer sat sideways on the gunwale, and with his arms crossed on his breast, looked to the southward upon the sea. After carefully laying Nina down in the shade of the bushes growing in the middle of the islet, Dane threw himself beside her, and watched in silent concern the tears that ran down from under her closed eyelids, and lost themselves in that fine sand upon which they both were lying face to face. These tears and this sorrow were for him a profound and disquieting mystery. Now, when the danger was past, why should she grieve? He doubted her love no more than he would have doubted the fact of his own existence, but as he lay looking ardently in her face, watching her tears, her parted lips, her very breath, he was uneasily conscious of something in her he could not understand. Doubtless as he had the wisdom of perfect beings. He sighed. He felt something invisible that stood between them, something that would let him approach her so far, but no farther. No desire, no longing, no effort of will or length of life could destroy this vague feeling of their difference. With awe but also with great pride he concluded that it was her own incomparable perfection. She was his, and yet she was like a woman from another world. His. His. He exulted in the glorious thought. Nevertheless, her tears pained him. With a wisp of her own hair which he took in his hand with timid reverence, he tried in an access of clumsy tenderness to dry the tears that trembled on her eyelashes. He had his reward in a fleeting smile that brightened her face for the short fraction of a second, but soon the tears fell faster than ever, and he could bear it no more. He rose and walked towards Elmer, who still sat absorbed in his contemplation of the sea. It was a very, very long time since he had seen the sea that leads everywhere, brings everything, and takes away so much. He had almost forgotten why he was there, and dreamily he could see all his past life on the smooth and boundless surface that glittered before his eyes. Dane's hand laid on Almayer's shoulder recalled him with a start from some country very far away indeed. He turned round, but his eyes seemed to look rather at the place where Dane stood than at the man himself. Dane felt uneasy under the unconscious gaze. What? Said Almayer. She is crying, murmured Dane, softly. She is crying. Why? Asked Almayer, indifferently. I came to ask you. My Rainie smiles when looking at the man she loves. It is the white woman that is crying now. You would know. Almayer shrugged his shoulders and turned away again towards the sea. Go, to impute it, urged Dane. Oh, to her, her tears are more terrible to me than the anger of gods. Are they? You will see them more than once. She told me she could not live without you, answered Elmer, speaking without the faintest spark of expression in his face, so it behoves you to go to her quick, for fear you may find her dead. He burst into a loud and unpleasant laugh which made Dane stare at him with some apprehension, but got off the gunwale of the boat and moved slowly towards Nina, glancing up at the sun as he walked. And you go when the sun is overhead? He said. Yes, Tuan. Then we go, answered Dane. I have not long to wait, muttered Elmer. Tea is most important for me to see you go. Both of you. Most important, he repeated, stopping short and looking at Dane fixedly. He went on again towards Nina, and Dane remained behind. Elmer approached his daughter and stood for a time looking down on her. She did not open her eyes, but hearing footsteps near her, murmured in a low sob, Dane. Elmer hesitated for a minute, and then sank on the sand by her side. She, not hearing a responsive word, not feeling a touch, opened her eyes, saw her father, and sat up suddenly with a movement of terror. Oh, father, she murmured faintly, and in that word there was expressed regret and fear and dawning hope. I shall never forgive you, Nina, said Elmer, in a dispassionate voice. You have torn my heart from me, while I dreamt of your happiness. You have deceived me. Your eyes that for me were like truth itself lied to me in every glance for how long? You know that best. When you were caressing my cheek you were counting the minutes to the sunset, that was the signal for your meeting with that man there. He ceased, and they both sat silent side by side, not looking at each other, but gazing at the vast expanse of the sea. Almayer's words had dried Nina's tears, and her look grew hard as she stared before her into the limitless sheet of blue that shone limpid, unwavering, and steady like heaven itself. He looked at it also, but his features had lost all expression, and life in his eyes seemed to have gone out. The face was a blank, without a sign of emotion, feeling, reason, or even knowledge of itself. All passion, regret, grief, hope, or anger all were gone, erased by the hand of fate, as if after this last stroke everything was over, and there was no need for any record. Those few who saw Elmer during the short period of his remaining days were always impressed by the sight of that face, that seemed to know nothing of what went on within. Like the blank wall of a prison enclosing sin, regrets, and pain, and wasted life, in the cold indifference of mortar and stones. What is there to forgive? Asked Nina, not addressing Elmer directly, but more as if arguing with herself. And I not live my own life as you have lived yours? The path you would have wished me to follow has been closed to me by no fault of mine. You never told me, muttered Elmer. You never asked me, she answered, and I thought you were like the others, and did not care. I bore the memory of my humiliation alone, and why should I tell you that it came to me because I am your daughter? I knew you could not avenge me. And yet I was thinking of that only, interrupted Elmer, and I wanted to give you years of happiness for the short day of your suffering. I only knew of one way. Ah, but it was not my way, she replied. Old, you give me happiness without life? Life, she repeated with sudden energy that sent the word ringing over the sea. If that means power and love, she added in a low voice. That, said Elmer, pointing his finger at Dane standing close by, and looking at them in curious wonder. Yes, that, she replied, looking her father full in the face, and noticing for the first time with a slight gasp of fear the unnatural rigidity of his features. I would have rather strangled you with my own hands, said Elmer, in an expressionless voice which was such a contrast to the desperate bitterness of his feelings, that it surprised even himself. He asked himself who spoke, and, after looking slowly round, as if expecting to see somebody, turned again his eyes towards the sea. You say that, because you do not understand the meaning of my words, she said sadly. Between you and my mother there never was any love. When I returned to Sambar, I found the place which I thought would be a peaceful refuge for my heart, filled with weariness and hatred and mutual contempt. I have listened to your voice, and to her voice. Then I saw that you could not understand me, for was I not part of that woman? Of her who was the regret and shame of your life? I had to choose, I hesitated. Why were you so blind? Did you not see me struggling before your eyes? But, when he came, all doubt disappeared, and I saw only the light of the blue and cloudless heaven. I will tell you the rest, interrupted Elmer. When that man came, I also saw the blue and the sunshine of the sky. A thunderbolt has fallen from that sky, and suddenly all is still and dark around me forever. I will never forgive you, Nina, and tomorrow I shall forget you. I shall never forgive you, he repeated with mechanical obstinacy while she sat, her head bowed down, as if afraid to look at her father. To him it seemed of the utmost importance that he should assure her of his intention of never forgiving. He was convinced that his faith in her had been the foundation of his hopes, the motive of his courage, of his determination to live and struggle, and to be victorious for her sake. And now his faith was gone, destroyed by her own hands, destroyed cruelly, treacherously, in the dark, in the very moment of success, in the utter wreck of his affections, and of all his feelings, in the chaotic disorder of his thoughts, above the confused sensation of physical pain that wrapped him up in a sting, as of a whiplash curling round him from his shoulders down to his feet. Only one idea remained clear and definite: not to forgive her, only one vivid desire to forget her. And this must be made clear to her, and to himself by frequent repetition. That was his idea of his duty to himself, to his race, to his respectable connections, to the whole universe unsettled and shaken by this frightful catastrophe of his life. He saw it clearly, and believed he was a strong man. He had always prided himself upon his unflinching firmness. And yet he was afraid. As he had been all in all to him. What if he should let the memory of his love for her weaken the sense of his dignity? She was a remarkable woman. He could see that. All the latent greatness of his nature, in which he honestly believed, had been transfused into that slight, girlish figure. Great things could be done. What if he should suddenly take her to his heart, forget his shame, and pain, and anger, and follow her? What if he changed his heart, if not his skin, and made her life easier between the two loves that would guard her from any mischance? His heart yearned for her. What if he should say that his love for her was greater than... I will never forgive you, Nina, he shouted, leaping up madly in the sudden fear of his dream. This was the last time in his life that he was heard to raise his voice. Henceforth he spoke always in a monotonous whisper, like an instrument of which all the strings but one are broken in the last ringing clamor under a heavy blow. She rose to her feet and looked at him. The very violence of his cry soothed her in an intuitive conviction of his love, and she hugged to her breast the lamentable remnants of that affection with the unscrupulous greediness of women who cling desperately to the very scraps and rags of love, any kind of love, as a thing that of right belongs to them, and is the very breath of their life. She put both her hands on Elmer's shoulders, and looking at him half tenderly, half playfully, she said, "You speak so because you love me." Elmer shook his head. "Yes, you do," she insisted softly. Then after a short pause she added, "And you will never forget me." Elmer shivered slightly. She could not have said a more cruel thing. "Here is the boat coming now," said Dane, his arm outstretched towards a black speck on the water between the coast and the islet. They all looked at it, and remained standing in silence till the little canoe came gently on the beach, and a man landed and walked towards them. He stopped some distance off and hesitated. "What news?" asked Dane. "We have had orders secretly, and in the night, to take off from this islet a man and a woman. I see the woman. Which of you is the man?" "Come, the light of my eyes," said Dane to Nina. "Ah, we go, and your voice shall be for my ears only. You have spoken your last words to the two imputed, your father. Come. She hesitated for a while, looking at Elmer, who kept his eyes steadily on the sea. Then she touched his forehead in a lingering kiss, and a tear, one of her tears, fell on his cheek and ran down his immovable face. Goodbye, she whispered, and remained irresolute till he pushed her suddenly into Dane's arms. If you have any pity for me, murmured Elmer, as if repeating some sentence learned by heart, take that woman away. He stood very straight, his shoulders thrown back, his head held high, and looked at them as they went down the beach to the canoe, walking endlessly in each other's arms. He looked at the line of their footsteps marked in the sand. He followed their figures moving in the crude blaze of the vertical sun, in that light violent and vibrating, like a triumphal flourish of brazen trumpets. He looked at the man's brown shoulders, at the red sarong round his waist, at the tall, slender, dazzling white figure he supported. He looked at the white dress, at the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.